Can't you see it? The world powered by solar and renewable energy. Here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We are now ready to depart.
Book your visit at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
Get a head start on 2025 with CNBC's Big January, the hottest tech event, CES, from Las Vegas. The data, the numbers, the jobs report, and meet the future of biotech and pharma at JPM Healthcare. Check out the Amex Golf Tournament from California, Inauguration Day, and the meeting of world leaders in Davos. Plus, the first Fed decision of the year. Get ahead of the game. Listen to CNBC on the Odyssey app.
Welcome to Speed City with John Massengill, Bob Varsha, and Jonathan Green. It's the fastest hour on the radio, Speed City.
All right, gearheads, welcome to Speed City. We just watched the Formula One Saudi Arabian Grand Prix. Max Verstappen wins another. He's won the first two races of the season, but we saw Ollie Bearman, the rookie, in his first race ever with some points. This is John Massengill in the studio in Austin, joined by Jonathan Green here in Austin and Bob Varsha from Atlanta over Zoom. Jonathan, what'd you think, buddy?
Pretty impressive. No question about it. Very impressive for at Red Bull again, obviously. Actually, pleased for Perez because this is, you know, what we, our complaint about Perez over the last couple of years and
P2
has been the fact that he hasn't been appearing in P2 and close enough to Verstappen. And that's two in a row now. So that helps the start of the year for a different year for Checo, but it's normal service resume for, you know,
yeah, for Max. And for Max.
And even if he threatens to leave the team as he has before the race, there's no distraction, is there?
Yeah. Bob Varsha, what do you think?
I enjoyed it thoroughly. I have to say, I love really fast racetracks like this and Spa and Monza and Silverstone. I mean, what more could you ask for? We had a great story with the debutante Bearman coming in and being the fourth consecutive driver to make his Formula One debut in a Ferrari and score points. But the first one since Arturo Mazzario back in 1972, you know, more from Max and Red Bull, and credit Sergio Perez, who was told he had to raise his game, and he appears to have done that, and he's still being self-critical, which is probably a good thing for a driver. You know, I just, it's a real burr under my saddle, so to speak, when I hear people talk about, well, Red Bull always wins. Well, yeah, and there's a reason for that. And it's because they're doing a superior job. And that's, you know, what Formula One is all about. Great battles in there, considering where McLaren were last year, when I don't think they barely scored any points in the first six or seven races of the season. And yet here they are doing really well to start off this season. Just a lot to talk about. That great dice at the end. Magnussen doing a great job holding up a train of six cars at one point to allow his teammate Nico Hülkenberg to go in, do a tire change, come back out, and still pick up a point for the team. Watching Alex Albon trying to fight his way out of that train of cars. And it was just good fun to watch.
I know. There was tons to watch up and down. Alonso finishing fifth. And, I mean, look at the the Haas cars. I mean, I got to check and see where or Magnussen ultimately finished after his 2 10-second time penalties.
But Hulkenberg scored points.
I think he's going to be 17th. He's gone to the back, beating everybody but Zhou Guanyu, I believe. Excuse me.
Yeah. I mean, you know, there's been a lot of discussion about on social media about F1 is not as fun to watch because Max is winning. But if you know the sport, it is absolutely fantastic to watch. So, and this story with Ollie Bearman, I love it. I'm trying to remember back to the pre-show. Who predicted?
I think it was
Casey. Can you roll the tape?
No.
Go Verstappen, Alonso, Piastri, and I say that Bearman finishes ahead of. I say finishes in the top seven. How about that? I'll go.
That would be stunning.
Yes, so it's not such a bold prediction that everyone will remember it if I'm wrong. But if I'm right, everyone, I'll get to play that clip. Mm-hmm. Okay.
So you're just you're deflecting here. So who predicted the top three? Bob, do you know?
Hey, which was easier?
Bob, please answer me that. Stand up and stop this nonsense.
You Philistine.
There you go. Taking all the glory for seven.
Casey cut the clip. I had
nothing. That's a bunch of malarkey.
And I'll tell you this. Verstappen's going to win in Melbourne. Where's Berman going to finish?
Yeah. So just so we're clear, Bob Varshak did say Verstappen, Perez, Leclerc. So just fair's fair.
Yeah, so he predicted Red Bull 1-2 and then a Ferrari after that. Wow, that's hard.
My prediction was off the mark.
All in good fun.
Even a broken clock is right every now and then.
Yeah, now and again, yeah.
Twice a day.
So let's just look at this because Piastri, I mean, in fourth with another outshining his teammate
You know, the one thing that, and the commentators were just saying at the end there, the one of the big stories of this weekend and the last two weekends is McLaren's form compared to Mercedes. And if they keep this up, I think they're going to be better than Mercedes in the long run.
Yeah. Yeah. And thinking about this, you know, at the beginning of the season, we thought, okay, looks like Mercedes is going to make a big move this year. And maybe they're going to be a strong for second. And they're no further ahead than they were last year. In fact, towards the end of the season, they're behind that point. I mean, I know it's still early this season, but still. And it looks like Chris Medlin just joined us. Mr. Medlin, what did you think of this race?
Great behind the front three, really, wasn't it? In terms of jeopardy and working out who was playing what game and whether it was going to get tight. In a sense, it never really did get tight. The Behrman fight with Norris and Hamilton, I was almost expecting more to come together with that. I should turn my video on, shouldn't I? There we go. I was expecting that to come to fruition. Tighter than it did. I thought McLaren would have the pace to get to Behrman, but cracking job he did. And then Kevin Magnussen. I mean, created enough drama for a couple of drivers with incidents, and then even more with the way he held them all off. It was, great result for Haas. And I think a real, you know, I mentioned it pre-race, and I'd keep an eye on how they did, and I was looking forward to seeing how they performed. Hülkenberg was just quick, and they had to make that strategy work. But as you've seen for Norris and Hamilton, it didn't really work very well, having not made the stop under the safety car. Mm-hmm. So to find a way to then make it work was great.
Mm-hmm. Tell you what,
that's all part of the fun. Yeah.
I tell you what, they're six in the championship, Haas, going into the next round in Australia, one of their best places for potential anyway over the years. I know it's only one point, but, when you look at those last four, Williams, Sauber, Ferrari, Honda, or RB, and Alpine, they've got the jump at least. And if they could get another couple of points, it would bode well.
Well, what do you think the phone call to Gene is? Hey, Gene, we're in sixth place. It's been a while.
Yeah, we still look like wankers, though.
Yeah, well, ask Williams what it's like to score no points in a season. You know, one is a big step from zero when it comes to the Formula One World Championship.
Yep.
And it is a surprise to see me out before.
Right now. Sorry, Chris. Uh-huh. Sorry, Johnny. I was going to say, starting from a very small sample set right now, but everything we've seen suggests Haas can target sixth this year.
Yeah.
Alpine is struggling. You'd imagine Alpine would have the development potential to maybe come back. That is something that Haas has not had for a while. But where the car is right now, it's definitely in that mix to fight for that sixth place. I mean, if Magnussen had a clean race, maybe it would have been him getting the points. You're not too sure in that sense. So, yeah, it'll be really interesting to see how they kind of do in this first part of the season, if they can pick up the points. But also, I just want to do a quick, it's not all doom and gloom thing. Ferrari, at this race last year, were nowhere. Yeah. Nowhere near the podium, not competitive. Not a track they expected to be strong at all. They thought it would be quite a weak one for them. Back-to-back weekends when they've been third and clearly the second quickest car, but this was the track that it made more of a difference. I think that's actually a fairly positive sign. I think there's going to be some circuits where Ferrari can get pretty close to Red Bull this year.
Like that. We're going to cut that clip out, Chris, because that's the money clip there. Everybody wants somebody to get competitive with Red Bull.
Going back to Haas, it's interesting to speculate about where Nico Hülkenberg would have qualified. If he hadn't lost the drive line in Q1.
Yeah, good point.
Yeah.
Albon finishing just
outside. True pace.
Yeah, Albon finishing just outside the points for Williams. Jonathan, you're talking about them not getting any points. They were just behind Hülkenberg there.
Yeah, yeah.
And we talked about Mercedes being slow, but what about Hamilton versus Russell? Hamilton has been slow all weekend, and the results show it. You know, Russell finishing sixth, Hamilton in ninth.
Yeah, and he's been quicker in this car, in this new iteration 24 car, than Hamilton has been in all the sessions so far, from what I've seen.
I think so. I think you're right. Because remember last weekend, Hamilton was saying, well, it was because I was, you know, I was doing high fuel loads, testing and qualifying, and then he didn't finish well. So, Chris, what do you think about what's going on with Hamilton?
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? Because he has a very specific driving style in terms of now, anyway, where he's comfortable, and he hasn't been comfortable with that Mercedes for a long time, basically this generation of car. And the thing was, last year, he didn't ever really look spectacular, did he? He had certain really strong races. He had the pole position in Hungary, but he was just consistent and kind of, yeah, he was right in that mix. Ended up, obviously, third in the championship at one point, looking like he could have got himself second with Perez. He was putting a bit of pressure on towards the end of the season. So I don't think it's been terrible for him by any stretch. And I think this could be one where they've actually got a car that he's going to be happier with, but that Russell definitely is a lot happier with and has kind of hit the ground running a little bit. But, I mean, you know, a day like today, they split the strategies, Mercedes. They actually sent a good explainer around to a few of us after the race to kind of explain what they did. And they offset the strategies at the safety car because they didn't know how the race was going to unfold. And it turned out that the medium soft was an option because the medium was a good tyre. But just getting caught up behind Norris meant that they couldn't make any further progress with Hamilton. But essentially, they were onto a loser with that strategy because of the way the field had bunched up. So if you switch that round, I think, and Hamilton's the one who pits, Russell stays out and does the medium soft approach, I think Hamilton finishes ahead of him. I think today's a strategy kind of result.
Okay.
But it would be interesting to see by the time we get to the summer, whether Hamilton has found a driving style that works, which the best drivers tend to do, they adapt, or if Russell stayed ahead of him. And that would be quite a telling sign, I think, if Russell can kind of keep a little bit of a margin there.
Conspiracy theory alert. I wonder how much Lewis, who said this year's car was improved, but I thought he was kind of guarded in his comments, which is quite natural with a new car. I wonder if he drove that car and thought about it and it contributed in some way to his decision to head for Ferrari next year.
Very interesting.
I think that deal had been done long before he got to drive this one, hadn't it? Last year would have been frustrating. Because he felt Mercedes didn't listen to him with what he wanted from last year's car. And then the second year of struggle really upset him because he'd said what he felt they needed to be doing. And then obviously the contract situation where Mercedes wouldn't offer him the length of deal he wanted either. For someone who'd had such success there, he felt he deserved more than that and wanted more than that. And Ferrari offered it. So I don't think it was the car in that sense. I think it won't have hurt now if he isn't happy with the car. He'll be even more confident in his decision. But everything he said about the car, actually, until really, I guess, qualifying, or maybe not qualifying here, but he did talk a bit about in practice the rear end being unstable in terms of the setup. They hadn't got it right in Jeddah. But in Bahrain, even though he was getting beaten by George, he was saying much happier. The car's in a much better place. This is a great place to start from. And he was very positive. So maybe he's just able to have that outlook now he knows he's leaving and he's not going to throw his toys out the pram over it. But it seems, from if we take it at face value, that he is actually happier with this car. It's just that, we've seen, Ferrari and McLaren have also made decent steps. McLaren are an interesting one because they say they've got a lot more to come still.
No question about this next question. Who do y'all think was driver of the day?
Has to be Ollie Bearman, yep.
Yeah, and
by a huge margin. I think he had 49% of the vote when they broadcast it on television. And he crushed it.
Just watching his first lap was pretty impressive against Yuki.
Yeah.
Hey, we have a question.
He was not timid, was he? Yeah, that was massively impressive because obviously it can all go wrong at that time. And he's still learning how the car reacts on full fuel with those tyres in so much traffic and dirty air and the impact of that. And as we mentioned on the pre-race show, the performance difference between an F2 car and F1 car is something like 14 seconds around that circuit. Totally different category, literally, but also, you know, you have to recalibrate everything in terms of braking zones and all those markers you have, your turning points, when you can pick up the throttle, all of that stuff. And he's kind of doing that on the fly. So I thought the opening few laps would be stay out of trouble, take it easy, be careful. But they went with the aggressive strategy, starting on the softs, so he had to make moves.
Yeah.
And he went for it. And he didn't find his way past Yuki, but he did go for it. Very impressive.
Mm-hmm. Chris, well, before you jumped on, when we first started, Jonathan talked about that this was a really great race for Sergio Perez because he's got this Red Bull car. He needs more P2s.
Yeah, absolutely. He's doing exactly what you'd expect. And he kind of kept Max generally honest, and he kind of 7-8 seconds was the gap, and he kept it there. He'd obviously dropped back a bit with the way the start had played out, but also just getting shuffled back in that pit stop phase. And then he got his time penalty. So if you look at the final result now, it looks bigger than it really was on the road. Mm-hmm. But it's an encouraging enough start for Checo, but we saw last year that he could have a strong start with a new car, feel fairly comfortable. And what Max does is susses it out and then finds a way of getting even more out of it. So that will be the acid test for Perez. Is going to be, can he go with Verstappen if there's more to come from Verstappen in this car? Can he adapt and improve with this car as the year goes on? Or does it go away from him again?
Yeah. Yep. I mean, look, I just, my point is just that I feel like he's just underperforming in general. Now today, that's where he needs to be. So I don't know. Maybe I'm putting too much on into that, but I just was thinking that. But what about Leclerc's race, Jonathan? Finishing P3?
Leclerc is anything but consistent. I mean, front row start, missing out on qualifying yet again, missing out on pole yet again, but by inches. He's not making mistakes. I don't know. Again, we're too early in the season to judge, but that Ferrari does look capable, as we said it, and all the commentators said it, of beating on its day at Red Bull. And that's a much better statement than we could make last year, where we never really saw light at the end of the tunnel for Ferrari. And I do think that what we've seen in this last 2 weeks gives us that light.
You're listening to Speed City. We'll be back after these messages.
As a rider, you know what you like. The power, the feel, the ride. When it comes to gear, you know what keeps you safe. Ducati Austin provides riders with the finest in day and easy leathers, the best the market offers. Visit Ducati Austin on Breaker Lane just east of I-35 and throw your leg over the most iconic sports bike ever built, Ducati. Even take it for a test ride or see what's been described as art on wheels from MV Agusta. You know what you like. See it at Ducati Austin. Online at DucatiAustin.com.
Hi, I am an official Texas license plate from MyPlates.com, and I'm here to say it's time to get personal, people. Tell the world who you are with a personalized plate from MyPlates.com, like me. I'm talking favorite color, favorite team, favorite charity, and of course, favorite state, Texas. Add your own message, and then the magic really happens. I'm the official Texas license plate from MyPlates.com, and I want to be your license plate. Go to MyPlates.com and order me today. Now that's what I'm talking about.
Hi, this is Karun Chandok, and you're listening to Speed City.
Welcome back to the fastest hour in radio, Speed City.
Last I'll say on the matter, but it just proves how strong that Red Bull team is and how strong Max is when all around that maelstrom around the team could have destroyed another team.
Yeah, good point. There's the maelstrom of Horner and all of that. So, there's plenty to talk about. Great race and from behind the Max, plenty. I say great race because there was, from a competitive standpoint, but there was so much going on with the Haas team.
I think the circuit played a lot to do with that. We said at the beginning, we like this circuit. It's super, super quick.
Well, and this is why what Ollie Bearman did is so phenomenal. It's his first race ever. He's only 18. He's in the pressure cooker Ferrari, and he's at this racetrack with walls looming all around him.
Yeah, Anthony Davidson said this would, of all the tracks that you could think of as a baptism of fire. At least Lawson had Suzuka in his pocket and then went to Singapore, places that, that there's plenty of sim work on. But this is a really tough track.
Yeah.
This or Baku,
I'm just looking as well at what Bearman did in terms of fastest lap. Like, he had to find a way of keeping Lando Norris and Lewis Hamilton behind him as they were closing in, manage the fitness, as we've said. And his fastest lap was on the final lap of the race, like a number of drivers were. But it was quicker than George Russell. It was quicker than Fernando Alonso. It was quicker than Oscar Piastri. And it was quicker than Sergio Perez.
That's
so
wild.
There were hardly any drivers. There's Norris and Hamilton with their soft tyres late on. And then Verstappen and Leclerc. They're the only drivers to do a faster lap than Bearman managed, which he did on the final lap of the race.
I think being faster than Checo,
as the race went on, he started to, when he thought he had a shot at catching who would it have been, Norris, he was back on it, and that was impressive. And he had a very very mediocre pit stop because he got stuck with all those cars coming down the pit lane under the safety car. They had to hold him for more than 5 seconds waiting to get back out in the queue.
Yeah. Well, that was Bob Varsha and Chris Medlin. Jonathan Green here is with us, and this is John Massengale. But Jonathan, what else grabbed your attention that we haven't talked about yet? I mean, just looking down this, right? I mean, the Piastri and the McLaren finishing fourth, I mean, impressive again, but go ahead.
I think if I'm looking at this microcosm of two very different circuits, maybe we should take this judgment after Australia, because it is, again, another very different circuit. But I would say that it bodes well for all of us watching on. When you look at how doom and gloom Mercedes were this time last year, same with McLaren, compared this year, Ferrari are in the hunt. Red Bull are the team to beat still, but we didn't expect anything different. But I do think that McLaren and Mercedes are going to have an almighty battle with Ferrari for that second place, if not actually take it to Red Bull.
Mr. Varsha, what do you think?
Well, I'm also thinking about Aston Martin in all of this.
Yep.
I mean, Fernando Alonso had another race. He had a plan. He was going to lay back and charge at the end. Didn't quite work out, but I think better than it did in Bahrain last week. And poor Lance Stroll, you know, put it in the barrier after touching the wall on the left for the second time this weekend, which broke his left front, and he had no steering and no braking and had a big one that fortunately he walked away from. But I think Aston, if they get their act together and they get a little more support from Stroll, you know, they're going to be in the middle of a terrific fight, not only for second, but third, fourth, and so on. And now, and you think about Haas, I think this was a great weekend for them in so many ways. I thought when Kevin Magnussen went off track, passing the RB, came back on, and every driver knows, I've got to give that position back, but he didn't do it. That tells me they had a strategy in place early on. It's like, do whatever you have to do to get in front of, I think it was Sonoda at the time, and hold him up so that Nico, who's ahead of you on the road, Nico Hülkenberg, can open up the gap, get in, get a pit stop, and salvage some points for the team. I'd love to know that backstory from Hayao Komatsu and the rest of the team, because I thought they just performed really brilliantly.
Yeah, great.
Now, speaking of that, David Lawrence tweeted at us.
Uh-oh.
He said, John Elkann, going to be, you know, CEO of Stellantis, et cetera, says, going to be making a call to Gene Haas and Hayao Komatsu about a 2025 seat for a certain Brit. After watching Ollie Bearman, what do y'all think? He says,
"That's what I jokingly said to you."
You said it to me during the race. Yeah,
that'll be the next.
What do you think, Chris?
To be honest, and I don't want to do like a obviously, but if you'd asked me this question 2-3 months ago, I'd have told you Bearman's driving the Haas in 2025, even before he got this chance. I mean, the six FP1s he's lined up for already tell you all you need to know.
Yeah.
Hülkenberg and Magnussen are exactly what Haas needed for the last 2 years, but there's so much movement in the driver market. I think both will be trying to put themselves in the shop window. And I think, let's be honest, so far over the last 18 months, Hülkenberg's probably the one who thinks he might be able to get a move elsewhere of the two. And I think that as part of that Ferrari partnership, it was really ramping up that Bearman was being prepared for that seat anyway. I think today has just meant that if Haas had any reservations about putting a rookie in, they know that the potential he's got and the talent he's got. It would be a bit of a shock, I think, for Bearman to, if his next race start in Formula One is in a Haas.
Yeah.
And he's had that excitement of doing it in a Ferrari, and then it's going to be a very different experience. But again, that's all great experience for him too. And as we saw with Ferrari and Charles Leclerc, like, they've moved drivers up quickly as well if they've done the job. Now, Leclerc and Hamilton will form a partnership for a while there, but Bearman's going to have every opportunity to prove that he is worthy of a future Ferrari seat too. And he could be, 21, 22, with a few years under his belt at Haas and then going into a Ferrari. So,
In place of Hamilton, who would fire,
It's just reaffirmed that plan, I think. But I don't think it's really changed anything.
Does Sauber fit into that equation in any way? Yeah, they're going to be Audi in 2026. But in the meantime, Nico Hülkenberg has got to be eyeing one of those Audi seats. He's German. They're German. You know, even if Sainz goes there, which a lot of people are thinking there might, Haas is an option. But I think 1 year maybe with the Sauber team is a possibility too, depending on how he develops.
Go on, Chris.
I was going to say, I think that would have been, 2025 would have been the only year that could have happened. But the fact that he is a Haas reserve and doing six FP1s for Haas, you're prepping him for that seat. Yeah. I can't see it being any other than that seat. Now, maybe if for some reason Haas say no, that they don't want to, they get another option, whatever it may be, then you might try last minute to make that other move happen. But I mean, we're also getting massively ahead of ourselves in the sense of we don't know what will happen with Sainz in Melbourne, and maybe Bearman gets another chance and doesn't do so well. We don't know how his F2 season goes. is, and if they then go, actually, look, he's still only 18, great first sign, but we're gonna slow this down and give him a third season in F2, or give him a whole year doing more practice sessions. Who knows? But yeah, right now, if you ask me to kind of pencil him in somewhere, I've got him driving fast next year.
Well, that's what y'all told me a while ago when I was predicting how good Ollie German
is.
It's
part of our mission statement. We have to get way out over our skis. That's what we do.
Exactly.
The other story in the background bubbling along that I wanted it to draw people's attention to, we talked about Aston Martin and how quickly they're going forward. I think the movement of their new executive director of technical, Bob Bell, from the aforementioned sinking ship that is Alpine, is a big move. He's worked for a lot of key teams and he's well respected. And it's just another brick of Alonso's group of people that he's brought from Alpine. And I think it's another, I don't know what Chris reckons, but Bob Bell is another good acquisition for Aston.
Yeah, certainly. I think it's strengthening that team with good experience. Partly as well, if you've got someone then who can look at what another rival team was doing and maybe even doing wrong. But, you know, we saw Pat Frye make the same move to Williams and got all these ideas that they want to implement that maybe were not being allowed to happen at Alpine. So I think that's a really good move in that sense. It remains to be seen quite how, because he was in an advisory role at Alpine.
Okay.
So Bell wasn't quite so hands-on, it seemed, any longer. So he's coming back into it with Aston. But I think it's the sort of thing that Aston do need. They've got to be careful not to have too many cooks because they're investing heavily. There's a lot of opportunities for change and choosing directions. And if you get a load of new people in at once and then they've all come up with their own ideas, like, who are you going to follow? But I'm kind of seeing Bell actually taking that position there from a technical point of view, just overseeing it all and going, I hear you all. I see what you want. This is the direction we're going to head in, which I think could be really, really steadying for that team. But as you mentioned Alonso there, it does fit in with, you know, that's someone that Alonso won championships with at Renault. But Alonso said he's going to make a decision early this year, like as early as possible, about his future so that Aston Martin know what they're dealing with, whether they need to go and look at anyone else or whether they've signed him up, that sort of thing. And I find that quite strange, actually, because Alonso has also spoken about how he knows he's so key to the driver market. He's one of, you know, he's a double world champion who is available and is clearly, as we've seen today again, performing at the very highest level.
Isn't he just being the cunning fox?
Unless
that
he's
trying
to force.
Yeah.
Maybe he's trying to force Mercedes to do something and say, we want you, or yes or no. I'm not totally sure on that front, but if I was him, I'd be saying, I'm going to, you know, play this out right to the very end and get a bidding war for my services between Aston and Mercedes and anyone else who might want me.
When in doubt, but just go err on the side that Alonso's being cunning. That's the way I would think about that. I think he's doing what you're saying, Jonathan.
He's swallowing Viagra and as potent as ever.
Yeah. And Jonathan, you said all these people are following Alonso to Aston Martin. Are they going to follow him to Mercedes?
But joking aside, we talked about it with, you know, how Schumacher in the day at Ferrari built a team around him of you know, of people that had worked with him before and Ross Brawn, John Barnard, etc., Rory Byrne. And, you know, I that's what I meant. We talked about it the other week that Alonso has got, you know, he took Pedro de la Rosa there. You know, he can kind of, with the help of Mr. Stroll, pick some of the people that he thinks are capable of putting a championship together.
Yeah, and Mr. Stroll is clearly doing something right. I mean, look how good Aston Martin is looking right now. We wouldn't have believed this 2 years ago.
No.
I mean, even last year, you were thinking, when is this? Are we going to go back to reality where, you know, I know they slowed a little bit at the end of the year, but here they are coming up at the beginning of this year looking great.
Yeah.
And there'll be a Honda team in 2006.
Yeah, good point.
Yeah, very true. That's I'm actually going to just check the gap that Alonso was behind in Jeddah a year ago.
Because good one.
His finishing position isn't so good right now compared to a year ago. But in terms of actually where he was classified, he finished 20 seconds behind Perez. So Verstappen obviously had to come through the field. So 20 seconds behind Perez, who realistically in a clean race would have been second to Verstappen last year. This year, he finished 22 seconds behind Perez. And that was 35 behind Max. But it kind of shows that Aston are holding their own there. It's just that others have kind of moved around them and stepped forward again when they'd had bad starts. But, you know, a lot of people were saying, well, we got a question, didn't we? Caller last week saying, should Aston Martin be worried? Or, you know, are the drivers going to be worried about this start to the season? And they're like, no, we've actually, our trajectory is still good. It's just that others are more up and down around us.
Mm. Ah, and if Stroll gets an appendix, you never know, Crawford could get the call up.
We'll have to find out. That's going to be my next bit of digging idea. I'm going to go around the paddock in Albert Park when I get to Melbourne. And I'm going to go, how many of you have had your appendix out?
Exactly. So who's under threat? All right, hand the ball in. I want to see them.
So Lando Norris got asked yesterday, I think seriously as well by a journalist, whether the new generation of cars and the porpoising and bouncing could have been a cause for appendicitis and therefore the drivers are more susceptible to it now. And he laughed it off. It was like, no. And then he Googled it and he said 1 in 13 people get it. So by those odds, we've kind of had our average ticked off. You know, we've had two drivers out of 20, but you never know. There could be a few more that are still susceptible to it.
Yeah. Did the stats show the frequency in F1 drivers? We don't know that stat. Hey, we got a really good text from Harry in Virginia. Many thanks to the entire Speed City crew for the great coverage. Thumbs way up for everyone. Ollie drove his ass off today and earned many new fans today, myself included, he says. Thanks, Harry. We appreciate you listening. All right, we're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we'll continue our breakdown of the Saudi Arabian Grand Prix and much more. Back after this.
Winding Road Racing is your first and best choice for all the essentials for a great weekend at the track. We're racers, and we love helping racers. With a full selection of racing gear in stock, get geared up with all the safety equipment needed to meet all the latest Snell, FIA, and SFI regulations. Outfit your car with a comprehensive lineup of racing necessities, and when you need to find a few more tents, turn to data acquisition systems from AIM Sports, V-Box, and others. Austin-based with shops in California, Georgia, and Kentucky, the source for all your racing needs. Winding Road Racing, WindingRoadRacing.com.
Motivation USA, catering to the sport bike enthusiast looking for truly unique parts and accessories. Stand out from the crowd. Motivation is the exclusive North American distributor for SC Project MotoGP inspired exhausts and the largest Rizoma retailer in the United States. Get the best parts from around the world at the best prices with fast shipping and a knowledgeable staff ready to help. Shop online 24/7 at MotivationUSA.com. That's MotivationUSA.com.
Hello to everyone, this is Gunther Steiner, this is Speed City.
Welcome back to the fastest hour in radio, Speed City.
All right, gentlemen, let's see, where were we a while ago when we took a break? I'm just looking out on Twitter and see what everybody was, what the chatter was, and the chatter is mostly about Ollie Bearman. Yeah. And I guess that is well-deserved.
Absolutely.
And
although Chris raised an interesting point when we were in break, and the folks out there on YouTube heard it, attrition is so much less a factor than it once was. I mean, if Lance Stroll doesn't clip the wall and stick it in the fence, he'd have had one car out of that race, and that would have been the first one of the 2024 season. I think I've told the story before. I wrote a small book with the late Dan Gurney about his 67 Spa-winning Gurney Eagle Westlake, and I was compiling the results of Dan's career in Formula One. And back then in the late 50s, early 60s, you'd lose half the field in a race just due to attrition, just, you know, breakdowns.
Yeah.
If you had 18 cars in a race, maybe 9, 10 would finish, which is probably why they only give out points to the top 6 in the race, because you weren't assured you'd have more cars than that finish.
Yeah, and that's so true. I mean, even just a couple of years ago. Go ahead, Chris.
I was going to say, yeah, part of it obviously comes down to the rules have been written to try and close the field up. We've got very restrictive aerodynamic rules to try and keep them close and let them race more closely. And it's worked with everyone pretty much but Red Bull. And then they froze the power units so that everyone wouldn't end up in a huge spending war before 2026. But by freezing the power units, they said all you can do is do reliability work, which means they get more and more reliable. And I feel like it's a balancing act, but it's probably better to have a greater chance of 20 cars all finishing the race and all close on performance, and we're seeing the drivers make the difference, than it is to have 12 cars finishing the race, a huge field spread, but you don't know which ones are actually going to see the end, because you might have the best driver doing a brilliant job, but then their car lets them down. And it's the lack of jeopardy, I don't think, is great for individual races. But I think you've kind of got to pick one or the other. And I think they probably picked the right one of the two. It's just a bit of a shame that it does mean you don't have that. I must watch to the final corner of the final lap in case something goes wrong for a car, which we used to have in the past that I think just helped F1 a little bit.
Yeah, that's a great point. And it also brings up the fact that these teams and engineers and designers and whatnot, are capable of so much more if they factor in that jeopardy. You know, they used to be running on the ragged edge and they were backing it down a little bit. The cars became heavier and so on because of the performance factors built into them that would reduce that attrition and hopefully allow them to race closer together. But it's something the rules makers have to be very careful about when they lay out the technical regs.
Well, something you said, Bob, in the break there about a stat from Virtual Statman, Sean Kelly, about Max Verstappen having now nearly led a third of his career led the championship for nearly a third of his career and more time than Ayrton Senna managed.
That's right. He has just passed Senna. Mm-hmm.
It's a stunning stat, but at the same time, it's kind of apples and pears, isn't it? Because Senna was racing in an era where he might have been just as dominant performance-wise, but his machinery might let him down more often. So you can't give the drivers the exact same comparison in that sense. And that's always something to remember when people say how hard it is to pick who's the best and that sort of thing. What we really want, though, and that's what they've done with these rules, is the opportunity to see the best fight it out on track as much as possible. So in that sense, reliability improving is better. I mean, anyone who's driven a rental go-kart, for example, you go with your friends to a rental kart facility. If you paid some money and you're racing, you're having fun, and then your kart lets you down, you don't go, oh, the drama of this, isn't that exciting? You get really annoyed. So,
yeah, absolutely. Right. Yeah. Yeah. Mechanical empathy used to be a real, arrow in a driver's quiver. And some drivers were much better at it than others. But that's not as big a factor anymore, for sure.
We're giving Sean Kelly way too much airtime, but he has another really good tweet here. He says, I don't know if this is the right time to bring it up, but Ollie Bearman is now officially last in the Formula 2 Drivers' Championship, and he lost 2 points for pole position. He says, tough weekend for the lad.
Yeah, we talked about that in our pre-race show. I mean, in order to put his stamp on a Formula 1 ride, presumably in Melbourne in 2 weeks, if Carlos Sainz can't go again, he's made the decision he's going to destroy his chance of a Formula 2 championship.
Speaking of Formula 2, by the way, for anyone who was listening to the pre-race show, Dennis Hauger kept his third place, so Jack Crawford stayed fourth in the standings from today. But in F1 Academy,
yes,
Dorianne Pan has just been announced, or 20 minutes ago, that she was given a 20-second time penalty for taking a checkered flag twice. She won the second Formula 1 Academy race.
What?
And then did another lap at racing speed. Didn't realize the race was over, and has lost the win. So
I guess that's dangerous driving at that speed after the checkered flag, right?
So did you get out of the car and punch her engineer?
Well, so I think she had reason to, because she missed the checkered flag. Definitely waving,
and she couldn't.
But then
there was
nothing else to signal the end of the race beyond that point. And her engineer didn't tell her on the radio. And it seemed they all took off their headsets and were celebrating in the pit lane.
Oh.
I haven't confirmed that's exactly what happened, but the pictures showed that. So when she sent a radio message checking something halfway around the lap, she didn't get a reply. And then when she finished the next lap, probably just being safe to make sure the race was over, she then got a message from the engineer being like, "What the hell are you doing? Like, the race is finished." And she's like, "You didn't tell me." So I actually think it wasn't on her.
I'm still racing.
Well, maybe not. And if I remember correctly, you know who was waving the checkered flag? Susie Wolf.
That was only race one. So race two wasn't. It was one. Race two was one of the female senior members of the Saudi Motorsport Federation.
It wasn't Jerry Halliwell then.
Forgive me for not remembering her name off the top of my head. But and she did it fine. I even rewound the race to check as they cross the line. The flag's there. You can see it. So it was just Pan missed it.
Where does that put her in race two then?
A long way back, I think, actually. 20 seconds. I didn't need to check the final results of that. I'll do that while Bob chats.
Well, I was going to make the point that time and again, we see these situations where they put a celebrity out there to wave the checkered flag. And
they don't know how to do it.
You know, they don't know what they're doing. And we had that time with Pelé, who waved it early, I think, in Brazil. Giselle.
He got the rebound, though.
Tom Brady's ex.
He didn't.
Remember when the head of Apple or Microsoft was waving it in Austin? He gave it one of these kinds of things.
Yeah, slow motion. I remember that.
And it was, it seems to come a cropper more often than not when you get a celebrity out there. You know, let a professional flag man handle that and be done with it.
Hey, I got another stat for you guys. We know that this was the 100th podium.
This isn't the Sultan of Shrewsbury again, is it?
No, it's not. It's no. It may. Who knows? It may have originated with him. But at the 100th podium for Verstappen, how many of those do you think are wins? Do you remember the stat earlier?
Over half, I would say.
56.
There you go.
56.
Well, I was going to say, we know he's got 56 wins.
Well, that's, I didn't know if you remembered it, but 56 out of 100. That's insane,
wild.
Insane stat.
56.
Yeah. And out of the last 2 years, like how many we go back to, is just enormous, isn't it? That he's got from the start of 22.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Race four of 22 onwards. It's going to be all but four, I want to say.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think Karun right. Chandhok described Max as metronomic, which is pretty much says it all.
Yeah. Very true.
Yeah. I will flag it was that penalty for Dorian Pan has dropped her to ninth in the result today.
Oh,
Takes her right out of it. So it means that Abby Pulling wins. Maya Vug, I think is how you say her
Vug,
name,
from Ferrari. The Ferrari driver. Second,
and Nerea Marti for Tommy Hilfiger goes up the third. And Chloe Chambers gets a point in 10th.
Yeah,
I saw that earlier. Yeah, we talked about her in the pre-show. She's doing great. She got,
the story of the academy, though, is
Marta Garcia is not in the championship this year, I think, is she?
No.
Correct, yeah. You're not allowed to stay in it if you win, as far as I'm aware. But if you finish, you can only do 2 years in total anyway, and you can't stay in it if you win it.
I see.
Talking of women, shout out to Chadwick. Just got fifth fastest in practice in Indy Next today.
That's impressive, for sure.
Yeah, I saw that.
Yeah, that's fantastic. All right, gentlemen, what are we going to talk about next?
During this whole saga at Red Bull, we're hearing Christian Horner and Helmut Marko each referred to as the guy who built the Red Bull Formula One team.
Yeah.
Who really deserves that kudo? Chris, you got thoughts on that?
Good question.
It is a good question. I mean, well, certainly Dietrich Mateschitz is not here to take that credit now. But if you think of what that brand was, what Red Bull was, it's an energy drinks company. And even just the sponsorship deals they did were big news. But under him, that was a company that then decided, we could own and invest and run these things. We don't have to just be a sponsor. We can be the driving force behind it. And I think, it's partly a blank checkbook at the time, isn't it? But by getting Adrian Newey in, then that was a huge step forward.
Mm.
But that was also Newey following Coulthard, who was there. And Newey and Coulthard had been actually tight in their careers for a long time. And I think there's lots of little pieces that come together in that sense. So Mateschitz is like vision, I think, was a big part. I think Marko, you've got to give huge credit, certainly for the driving perspective, what they've done with the junior team, but young drivers, giving them a chance, creating these huge popular athletes. I mean, obviously they uncovered Max, who is incredible, but also that was more jumping on an opportunity when it was there and showing the faith in him and putting him into a car at such a young age when no other team was willing to make that same offer, even though they all wanted to sign him. But then you look at someone like Daniel Ricciardo coming through their system. There's Sebastian Vettel. There's some incredible drivers that have come through. So that would be on Marko. But I think it would be wrong to overlook the importance of Horner in piecing it together, certainly from a race operations point of view, and keeping it together. I do think he's very much like a top level PR sort of manager. I think he's the forward facing one. He is, like you just kind of alluded to, Bob, your Zak Brown style. He's more he is the CEO and team principal,
right?
But he's more the CEO
face.
Yeah, and I feel like there are others below him that are more the team principal as such in terms of the way they run the team, the race team, the way things happen. So, kind of, if you liken it to what Steiner was doing, it would be like if Steiner had given Komatsu the team principal role and he was the CEO. I think Horner kind of is doing everything, and it would be a big loss, I think, to that team if he went. There'd be a lot of people that need to fill certain positions. But I don't think you can ever, it's certainly such complex, I know it's a long-winded answer to this, but such complex organizations, you can't ever just say it's one person. One person's doing this job. So in that sense, disingenuous of Max to say, Helmut built this up. He played a huge role, yes, but he couldn't have done
that. That was a political comment, I'm sure of it.
And Horner had built a very fine Formula 3000 team before he got chosen to head up Dietrich Mateschitz's vision.
Absolutely. He was the youngest team principal at the time, by far. And, was a brave call. They'd seen something in him there at that age that he could take that on and be the right driving force, but also probably that he could be a long-term one if it worked. And that's exactly how it's proven. So, just following up with what Johnny said, absolutely, you're right, that what Max said was a political comment.
It seems,
according to Marko today, that then the meeting he had with Mintzlaff went well and he's been promised everything he wanted. So we wonder what that actually proves to be, which I'm sure we'll find out in a few days because, we haven't had a quiet day in Formula One for a long time.
Well, there's no question. I mean, you go back to Horner's time with Vettel and Webber, and obviously Vettel's four titles in a row. I mean, that had nothing to do with the Verstappens. And how much it had to do with Helmut Marko? Well, I don't think his influence on the team was as big as it is now politically. you know, so yeah, Horner, there's definitely gone, something's gone wrong in the background with the Verstappens and the Horners, because there's definitely no love lost.
All right, guys, let's get a quick break in. And when we come back, we're going to talk about a little update from Andretti Global. Listening to this Speed City back after these minutes.
Welcome to Name Your License Plate. I'm Biff Biffington. All right, Mary Lou, for the cash, the trip, and a new car, name your license plate.
Easy. My plate is ADD24. ACL, ATM, ABC, ACDC, AAA. I can't remember my plate.
You should have gotten a personal Texas plate from MyPlates.com. They're so memorable.
And I could have saved 40% with a 5-year commitment.
Be a winner and order your personalized license plate from MyPlates.com.
As a rider, you know what you like. The power, the feel, the ride. When it comes to gear, you know what keeps you safe. Ducati Austin provides riders with the finest in day and easy leathers. The best the market offers. Visit Ducati Austin on Breaker Lane just east of I-35 and throw your leg over the most iconic sports bike ever built. Ducati. Even take it for a test ride or see what's been described as art on wheels from MV Agusta. You know what you like. See it at Ducati Austin. Online at DucatiAustin.com.
Hi, this is Mario Andretti, and this is Speed City.
Welcome back to the fastest hour in radio, Speed City.
All right, welcome back to Speed City, our last segment on our post-race show for the Saudi Arabian Grand Prix. Very interesting race. Lots of things going on. Max Verstappen winning, Ollie Bearman in his inaugural race, finishing P7th. Pretty amazing
stuff.
By the
way, I never looked. How bad were Alpine today compared?
Yeah.
We kind of forgot about them, didn't we?
Well, Gasly didn't.
Yeah, I guess he didn't have.
Finish, yeah.
Yeah, he didn't get started.
Ocon got 13th. He's a lap down. Yeah. But he did beat Tsunoda, Sargeant, Ricciardo, Bottas, and Joe. So
Tsunoda was a disappointment for me.
He's had a shocker in the end.
Yeah. Tsunoda had a, I thought, disappointing. Mm.
All right, I said we'd talk Andretti. Jonathan, you had this story. Was it you that had it in there, or was it Bob?
I think it was Bob.
Yeah, Bob. Talking about Andretti with their announcement of
the facility.
Yeah, I loved it. And it was, talk about political commentary. They showed pictures of their building site in Indianapolis area. And they've made some changes, and they're proceeding with construction at pace. Which happens to be the exact phrase they used when they were denied a position on the Formula One grid next year, and said, we're going to keep pursuing our membership in the Formula One fraternity at pace, which I thought,
yeah, and also
that just jumps right off the page.
And also, it was carefully written to point out that the people who had designed said buildings were British and had just finished their work on the Aston Martin project. So, yeah,
right.
I mean, basically saying, yeah, we're using the same people that Aston Martin use, and therefore, yeah,
and
I mean, pretty impressive.
Silverstone is already, you know, acquired. I don't know if it's set up and ready to go, but...
Yeah, very impressive.
We are proceeding.
Yeah, this is a story on motorsport.com. If you want to look it up, the headline is Andretti sends signal to F1 with images of its future U.S. base. This is Adam Cooper doing the story. Adam, Andretti Global has sent a strong signal to Formula One organization by revealing the first images of the U.S. headquarters.
It's definitely a signal, for sure.
Yes, definitely a signal. And where is that? It's just outside Fisher's, right? Just outside Indianapolis.
Yeah, it's Fisher's, near the airport.
Yep. Yeah. Well,
speaking of wild stories, you see the one that Sebastian...
Hello to everyone, this is Günther Steiner, this is Speed City.
Welcome back to the fastest hour in radio, Speed City.
All right, gentlemen, let's see, where were we while ago when we took a break? I'm just looking out on Twitter and see what everybody was, what the chatter was, and the chatter's mostly about Ollie Bearman.
Yeah.
And I guess that is well-deserved.
Well-deserved. Yeah, absolutely.
And
although Chris raised an interesting point when we were in break, and the folks out there on YouTube heard it, attrition is so much less a factor than it once was. I mean, if Lance Stroll doesn't clip the wall and stick it in the fence, he'd have one car out of that race, and that would have been the first one of the 2024 season. I think I've told this story before. I wrote a small book with the late Dan Gurney about his 67 Spa winning Gurney Eagle Westlake and I was compiling the results of Dan's career in Formula One. And back then in the late 50s, early 60s, you'd lose half the field in a race just due to attrition, just, you know, breakdowns.
Yeah.
If you had 18 cars in a race, maybe 9, 10 would finish, which is probably why they only give out points to the top six in the race, because you weren't assured you'd have more cars than that finish.
Yeah, isn't that so true? I mean, even just a couple of years ago. Go ahead, Chris.
I was going to say, yeah, part of it obviously comes down to the rules have been written to try and close the field up. We've got very restrictive aerodynamic rules to try and keep them close and let them race more closely. And it's worked with everyone pretty much but Red Bull. And then they froze the power units so that everyone wouldn't end up in a huge spending war before 2026. But by freezing the power units, they said all you can do is do reliability work, which means they get more and more reliable. And I feel like it's a balancing act, but it's probably better to have a greater chance of 20 cars all finishing the race and all close on performance, and we're seeing the drivers make the difference, than it is to have 12 cars finishing the race, a huge field spread, but you don't know which ones are actually going to see the end, because you might have the best driver doing a brilliant job, but then their car lets them down. And it's the lack of jeopardy, I don't think, is great for individual races. But I think you've kind of got to pick one or the other, and I think they probably picked the right one of the two. It's just a bit of a shame that it does mean you don't have that I must watch to the final corner of the final lap in case something goes wrong for a car, which we used to have in the past that I think just helped F1 a little bit.
Yeah, that's a great point. And yep. It also brings up the fact that these teams and engineers and designers and whatnot are capable of so much more if they factor in that jeopardy. You know, they used to be running on the ragged edge and they were backing it down a little bit. The cars became heavier and so on because of the performance factors built into them that would reduce that attrition and hopefully allow them to race closer together. But it's something the rules makers have to be very careful about when they lay out the technical regs.
Well, something you said, Bob, in the break there about a stat from Virtual Statman, Sean Kelly, about Max Verstappen having now nearly led a third of his career, led the championship for nearly a third of his career, and more time than Ayrton Senna managed.
That's right. He has just passed Senna. Mm-hmm.
It's a stunning stat, but at the same time, it's kind of apples and pears, isn't it? Because Senna was racing in an era where he might have been just as dominant performance-wise, but his machinery might let him down more often. So you can't give the drivers the exact same comparison in that sense. And that's always something to remember when people say how hard it is to, you know, pick who's the best and that sort of thing. What we really want, though, and that's what they've done with these rules, is the opportunity to see the best fight it out on track as much as possible. So in that sense, reliability improving is better. I mean, anyone who's driven a rental go-kart, for example, you go with your friends to a rental kart facility. If you paid some money and you're racing and you're having fun and then your kart lets you down, you don't go, oh, the drama of this, isn't that exciting? You get really annoyed. So,
yeah, absolutely. Right. Yeah. Yeah. Mechanical empathy used to be a real, arrow in a driver's quiver. And some drivers were much better at it than others. But that's not as big a factor anymore, for sure.
We're giving Sean Kelly way too much airtime, but he has another really good tweet here. He says, I don't know if this is the right time to bring it up, but Ollie Bearman is now officially last in the Formula 2 Drivers' Championship, and he lost 2 points for pole position. He says, tough weekend for the lad.
Yeah, we talked about that in our pre-race show. I mean, in order to put his stamp on a Formula 1 ride, presumably in Melbourne in 2 weeks, if Carlos Sainz can't go again, he's made the decision he's going to destroy his chance of a Formula 2 championship.
Speaking of Formula 2, by the way, for anyone who was listening to the pre-race show, Dennis Hauger kept his third place, so Jack Crawford stayed fourth in the standings from today. But in F1 Academy,
yes,
Dorian Pan has just been announced, or 20 minutes ago, that she was given a 20-second time penalty for taking a checkered flag twice. She won the second Formula 1 Academy race.
What?
And then did another lap at racing speed, didn't realize the race was over, and has lost the win. So
I guess because that's dangerous driving at that speed after the checkered flag, right?
So did you get out of the car and punch her engineer?
Well, so I think she had reason to, because she missed the checkered flag. It was definitely waving.
And she couldn't
But then there was
hear.
Nothing else to signal the end of the race beyond that point. And her engineer didn't tell her on the radio. And it seemed they all took off their headsets and were celebrating in the pit lane.
Oh.
I haven't confirmed that's exactly what happened, but the pictures showed that. So when she sent a radio message checking something halfway around the lap, she didn't get a reply. And then when she finished the next lap, probably just being safe to make sure the race was over, she then got a message from the engineer being like, what the hell are you doing? Like, the race is finished. And she's like, you didn't tell me. So I actually think it wasn't on her.
I'm still racing.
Well, maybe not. And if I remember correctly, you know who was waving the checkered flag? Susie Wolf.
That was only race one. So race
only
two wasn't.
One?
It was one. Race two was one of the female senior members of the Saudi Motorsport Federation.
It wasn't Jerry Halliwell?
Yeah,
then.
Forgive me for not remembering her name off the top of my head, but So and she did it fine. I even rewound the race to check as they cross the line. The flag's there. You can see it. So it was just hand missed. You know,
where does that put her in race two then?
A long way back, I think, actually. 20 seconds. I didn't need to check the final results of that. I'll do that while Bob chats.
Well, I was going to make the point that time and again, we see these situations where they put a celebrity out there to wave the checkered flag. And
they don't know how to do
it. They don't know what they're doing. And we had that time with Pelé, who waved it early, I think, in Brazil. Giselle.
He got the rebound, though.
Tom Brady's ex.
he didn't.
Remember when the head of Apple or Microsoft was waving it in Austin? And you know, he gave it one of these kinds of things.
Yeah, slow motion. I remember that.
It was, you know, it seems to come a cropper more often than not when you get a celebrity out there. You know, let a professional flag man handle that and be done with it.
Hey, I got another stat for you guys. We know that this was the 100th podium.
This isn't the Sultan of Shrewsbury again, is it?
No, it's not. It's no. It may. Who knows? It may have originated with him. But at the 100th podium for Verstappen, how many of those do you think are wins? Do you remember the stat earlier?
Over half, I would say.
56.
There you go.
56.
Well, I was going to say, we know he's got 56 wins.
Well, that's, I didn't know if you remembered it, but 56 out of 100. That's insane stat.
56.
Yeah. And out of the last 2 years, like how many we go back to is just enormous, isn't it? That he's got from the start of 22.
Yeah.
Race four of 22 onwards, it's going to be all but four, I want to say.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I think Karun Shandok described Max as metronomic, which is pretty much says it all.
Yeah, very true.
Yeah. I will flag, it was that penalty for Dorian Pan has dropped her to ninth in the result today.
Oh,
takes her right out of it. So it means that Abbey Pulling wins. Maya Vug, I think is how you say her
Vug,
name,
from Ferrari driver,
second,
yeah.
And Nerea Marti for Tommy Hilfiger goes up the third. And Chloe Chambers gets a point in 10th.
Yeah.
Yeah, I saw that earlier. Yeah. We talked about her in the pre-show. She's doing great. She's
the story of the Academy, though, is
Marta Garcia is not in the championship this year, I think, is she?
No.
Correct, yeah. You're not allowed to stay in it if you win, as far as I'm aware. But if you finish, you can only do 2 years in total anyway, and you can't stay in it if you win it.
I see.
Talking to women, shout out to Chadwick. Just got fifth fastest in practice in Indy Next today.
That's impressive.
Yeah,
for sure.
Yeah, I saw that.
Yeah, that's fantastic. All right, gentlemen, what are we going to talk about next?
During this whole saga at Red Bull, we're hearing Christian Horner and Helmut Marko each referred to as the guy who built the Red Bull Formula One team.
Yeah.
Who really deserves that kudo? Chris, you got thoughts on that?
Good question.
It is a good question. I mean, well, certainly Dietrich Mateschitz is not here to take that credit now. But if you think of what that brand was, what Red Bull was, it's an energy drinks company. And even just the sponsorship deals they did were big news. But under him, that was a company that then decided, we could own and invest and run these things. We don't have to just be a sponsor. We can be the driving force behind it. And I think it's partly a blank checkbook at the time, isn't it? But by getting Adrian Newey in, then that was a huge step forward.
Mm.
But that was also Newey following Coulthard, who was there. And Newey and Coulthard had been actually tight in their careers for a long time. And I think there's lots of little pieces that come together in that sense. So Mateschitz's like vision, I think, was a big part. I think Marko, you've got to give huge credit, certainly for the driving perspective, what they've done with the junior team, but young drivers, giving them a chance, creating these huge popular athletes. I mean, obviously they uncovered Max, who is incredible, but also that was more jumping on an opportunity when it was there and showing the faith in him and putting him into a car at such a young age when no other team was willing to make that same offer, even though they all wanted to sign him. But then you look at someone like Daniel Ricciardo coming through their system. There's Sebastian Vettel. There's some incredible drivers that have come through. So that would be on Marko. But I think it would be wrong to overlook the importance of Horner in piecing it together, certainly from a race operations point of view, and keeping it together. I do think he's very much like a top level PR sort of manager. I think he's the forward facing one. He is, like you just kind of alluded to, Bob, your Zak Brown style. He's more he is the CEO and team principal,
right?
But he's more the CEO
face.
Yeah, and I feel like there are others below him that are more the team principal as such, in terms of the way they run the team, the race team, the way things happen. So, kind of, if you liken it to what Steiner was doing, it would be like if Steiner had given Komatsu the team principal role and he was the CEO. I think Horner kind of is doing everything. And it would be a big loss, I think, to that team if he went. There'd be a lot of people that need to fill certain positions. But yeah. I don't think you can ever, it's certainly such complex, I know it's a long-winded answer to this, but such complex organizations, you can't ever just say it's one person. One person's done this job. So in that sense, disingenuous of Max to say Helmut built this up. He played a huge role, yes, but he couldn't have done
that. That was a political comment, I'm sure of it.
And I mean, Horner had built a very fine Formula 3000 team before he got chosen to head up Dietrich Mateschitz's vision.
Absolutely. He was the youngest team principal at the time, by far. And, you know, that was a brave call. But they'd seen something in him there at that age that he could take that on and be the right driving force, but also probably that he could be a long-term one if it worked. And that's exactly how it's proven. So, just following up with what Johnny said, absolutely, you're right, that what Max said was a political comment.
You know, and when
and
you
it
go...
it seems, according to Marco today, that then the meeting he had with Mintzlaff went well and he's been promised everything he wanted. So we wonder what that actually proves to be, which I'm sure we'll find out in a few days because, you know, we haven't had a quiet day in Formula 1 for a long time.
Well, there's no question. I mean, yeah, you go back to Horner's time with Vettel and Webber, and obviously Vettel's four titles in a row. I mean, you know, that had nothing to do with the Verstappens. And how much it had to do with Helmut Marko? Well, I don't think his influence on the team was as big as it is now, politically. You know, so Horner, there's definitely gone, something's gone wrong in the background with the Verstappens and the Horners, because there's definitely no love lost.
All right, guys, let's get a quick break in. And when we come back, we're going to talk about a little update from Andretti Global. Listen to this Speed City back after these minutes.
Welcome to Name Your License Plate. I'm Biff Biffington. All right, Mary Lou, for the cash, the trip, and a new car, name your license plate.
Easy. My plate is ADD24. ACL, ATM, ABC, ACDC, AAA. I can't remember my plate.
You should have gotten a personal Texas plate from MyPlates.com. They're so memorable.
And I could have saved 40% with a 5-year commitment.
Be a winner and order your personalized license plate from MyPlates.com.
As a rider, you know what you like. The power, the feel, the ride. When it comes to gear, you know what keeps you safe. Ducati Austin provides riders with the finest in day and easy leathers. The best the market offers. Visit Ducati Austin on Breaker Lane just east of I-35 and throw your leg over the most iconic sports bike ever built. Ducati. Even take it for a test ride or see what's been described as art on wheels from MV Agusta. You know what you like. See it at Ducati Austin. Online at DucatiAustin.com.
Hi, this is Mario Andretti, and this is Speed City.
Welcome back to the fastest hour in radio, Speed City.
All right, welcome back to Speed City, our last segment on our post-race show for the Saudi Arabian Grand Prix. Very interesting race. Lots of things going on. Max Verstappen winning, Ollie Bearman in his inaugural race, finishing P7th. Pretty amazing
stuff. By the
way,
I never looked. How bad were Alpine today compared?
Yeah.
We kind of forgot about them, didn't we?
Well, Gasly didn't.
Yeah, Gasly didn't have.
Finish, yeah.
Yeah, he didn't get started.
Ocon got 13th. He was a lap down. Yeah. But he did beat Tsunoda, Sargeant, Ricciardo, Bottas, and Joe. So
Tsunoda was a disappointment for me.
He's had a shocker in the end.
Yeah. Tsunoda had disappointing. Mm.
All right, I said we'd talk Andretti. Jonathan, you had this story. Was it you that had it in there, or was it Bob?
I think it was Bob.
Yeah, Bob, talking about Andretti with their announcement of
the facility.
Yeah, I loved it. And it was, talk about political commentary. They showed pictures of their building site in Indianapolis area, and they've made some changes, and they're proceeding with construction at pace. Which happens to be the exact phrase they used when they were denied a position on the Formula One grid next year, and said, we're going to keep pursuing our membership in the Formula One fraternity at pace, which I thought,
and also
that just jumps right off the page.
And also, it was carefully written to point out that the people who had designed said buildings were British and had just finished their work on the Aston Martin project. So, I mean, basically saying, we're using the same people that Aston Martin use, and therefore, pretty impressive.
Silverstone is already, acquired. I don't know if it's set up and ready to go, but
Very impressive.
We are proceeding.
Yeah, this is a story on motorsport.com. If you want to look it up, the headline is Andretti sends signal to F1 with images of its future U.S. base. Yeah, this is Adam Cooper doing the story. Adam, Andretti Global has sent a strong signal to Formula One organization by revealing the first images of the U.S. headquarters.
It's definitely a signal, for sure.
Yes, definitely a signal. And where is that? It's just outside Fisher's, right? Just outside Indianapolis.
Yeah, it's near the airport.
Yep. Yeah. Well,
speaking of wild stories, you see the one that Sebastian Vettel has, how should I put this, refused to deny that he misses Formula One and would consider a comeback.
With Mercedes?
Yeah, I think he was talking with Toto Wolff. You know, he talks with everybody. Sebastian's a pretty chatty guy. But apparently there's still a connection there. His heart still speaks to driving the racing car. And he might consider coming back because he's made it clear in the past that he doesn't want to do anything else other than Formula One. So
he's still young enough and capable enough. But
yeah, he's 36.
Yeah. But, you know, my gosh, those last two seasons were almost like, please go home. You know, I mean, he wasn't in it, was he?
Mm. No, in the Aston Martin, no.
Hey, let's pivot to the Audi story. Chris Medlin, it wasn't long ago we were talking about, is Audi even fully committed? Are they really going to do this? Do they have cold feet? And now we're hearing that they're all in.
Yeah, they announced it. They put out a press release to make it clear where they're headed. But also it's because I think there was some uncertainty about how they were going to approach the partnership with Sauber. So if you remember when it was announced, I think was it summer 22, Audi said they were coming in as a power unit supplier in 2026 and that they would announce their partner for that in due course. Then they said it would be Sauber and that would be their works team, but that was their partner. But what they then confirmed yesterday is that they're going to take over the Sauber group completely, 100% takeover from Audi. So there's no half measures here. This is when anyone says, you know, why aren't Andretti buying a Formula One team? Well, there's not one for sale for starters, but the only one that is changing hands is because Audi has purchased Sauber and they already had a partnership agreed with them. And I would love to know the price. I don't actually have a figure on it. But if you think, I think it's $300 million that Andretti were looking to invest to take a majority shareholding in Sauber a number of years ago and then found out they weren't going to have the autonomy they wanted. And that's why that deal fell through. Sauber essentially were taking the money for the investment, but still wanted to run it completely themselves from Switzerland. So that's why Andretti never bought it then. And also, you know, this would have been, you don't go in a bidding war with Audi that was already had a deal going on. So this was not an option for Andretti. But yeah, it'll be, I think it's Oliver Hoffman, who is currently on the board at Audi, is going to become the chairman of the Sauber Group. And he's going to head up Audi's kind of Formula One forward-facing corporate side. But then Andreas Seidel will be the F1 CEO for Audi, for the what they just call the Audi F1 team. So,
Does Sauber have any other interests now outside of Formula One? Any other sports car projects, etc.? Chariots?
Say again, sorry.
Audi?
Does Sauber have any other interests, whether it be Chariots or a sports car project or anything else asset-wise?
So they do a lot of kind of manufacturing and building and sim work. So essentially they're like a supplier to lots of other companies, but they don't have their own chassis as such that goes into sports cars. That would be if a sports car manufacturer needed a part making, they might well partner with Sauber to do it or get Sauber to make it. But they also do a lot that's not motorsport, if I recall correctly. So they're quite diverse in that sense. But no, from a motorsport point of view, it seems to be that they've only focused now on F1 for their own entity.
And Chirous was connected with Sauber, but it's gone, right?
Yeah, in Himmelt and Switzerland, it is. I suspect that the time it's taken Audi to get from where Chris left them off and the announcement that came this week was to negotiate the rest of that takeover. I think it was always Audi's intention to take over the whole thing, but they hadn't quite gotten the ink dry on what it was going to take to complete going from a majority shareholder to a single shareholder in the team, the Audi group, the Sauber group.
Jonathan, I was a bad host because there was another Andretti story that you had in there that we wanted to talk about General Motors. And your story was, are they still confident in Andretti?
Yeah, that was, the question mark being, is General Motors still there? And the answer is yes.
They have cold feet. Is anybody?
No. And the story basically saying that that General Motors have not got cold feet, and they are still committed to an Andretti project. And that's an important story, in what's going on at the moment, and with, obviously the question mark being thrown out there, given that they haven't got the go-ahead. It's a long way to 2028, but are GM committed? And if they are, then that story about the facility, et cetera, all make sense and give credence to effectively their partner being all in. And so therefore, yeah, that's why I put it in there, was to basically say, look, despite all that's gone on, the biggest motor company in the world, or one of them, is still heavily committed to Formula One. And that's important both to Formula One, to Ford, to the sport, to the auto industry, and obviously mainly important to Andretti's going forward on pace.
Yeah. Chris, sorry, buddy. I know that some of these stories you have on Racer, we should be showing those.
Unbelievable. I was thinking that with the Andretti
I know.
One, but then actually I looked because I thought that would be an IndyCar taken story rather than anywhere else, and I couldn't find it. So I'm going to have to do some digging to make sure we have that, the HQ, because I got the press release, saw the pictures. Looks a little bit, still a little bit McLaren-esque, isn't it?
Yes.
A little bit of balancing pond.
Very much so.
Definitely.
If you want a further Red Bull-esque development, Christian Horner post-race has been very keen to point out that no individual is bigger than the team when discussing Max and Marco's future. And I think he's trying to push back a bit and say Max doesn't get to run the team by saying what he wants to happen or doesn't want to happen. Now, it's true, but at the same time, Christian's then saying the same thing for himself, isn't he? No individual is bigger than the team.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Back at you, buddy.
It's an interesting situation because the battle lines are drawn. The Verstappens have said they want him out, clearly, in reading between the lines. And
you don't have to read Jos Verstappen's lines.
No, and Red Bull, at the moment anyway, is still backing Horner. So,
Well, I still say behind all this is a line that I'll never forget from Ross Braun back in the day, trying to get the Honda to work before it became Braun GP. And he was asked about drivers, who might you get? Who's the best? Yada, yada, yada. Braun said, we're not worrying about drivers right now. We're worrying about creating the best car on the grid. If you have the best car, you don't need to worry about drivers because they're coming to you. And that's exactly the situation. True. Max Verstappen and his ilk, his posse on that side of the Horner issue has got to be thinking. I mean, does this issue matters so much to me that I would give up the best car on the grid and go somewhere else? I don't think so.
Toto Wolff actually gave a modern version of that just a couple of days ago by saying, he was asked whether he would be interested in Max Verstappen, and he kind of turned the question on its head by saying, look, yes, of course we'd be interested, but the best driver in the world will go where the best car is, and right now the best car is at Red Bull.
Every time.
So. Yeah, he said something similar tonight, actually. He said he'd love to have him, and that there wouldn't be a team that wouldn't do handstands to have him.
Mm-hmm.
But his point of I'd love to have him is because Merck is so far off the pace right now that he'd love to be in a position that Max wants to go there. So I don't think it's as clear cut that that's where he'd end up if he does leave. But that's going to rumble on. That's going to be one that we're talking about for weeks and weeks. And hopefully, if the signs from Ferrari were pretty strong this weekend, that they can really challenge Red Bull at some races. It's going to be fun to watch when the pressure's put on Red Bull during a Grand Prix, isn't it?
Yeah.
We're out of time. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in. Don't forget, Wheel to Wheel this week and next
Australia.
Sunday night. No, not we got a week, but next Sunday night we'll be live in Austin. Thanks, everybody. Talk to you soon.
Have a trip.
This is Mario Andretti, and this is Speed City.
Welcome back to the fastest hour in radio, Speed City.
All right, welcome back to Speed City, our last segment on our post-race show for the Saudi Arabian Grand Prix. Very interesting race. Lots of things going on. Max Verstappen winning, Ollie Bearman in his inaugural race, finishing P7th. Pretty amazing
stuff. By the
way,
I never looked. How bad were Alpine today compared?
Yeah.
We kind of forgot about them, didn't we?
Well, Gasly didn't.
Yeah, Gasly didn't
finish, yeah.
Yeah, he didn't get started.
Ocon got 13th. He was a lap down. Yeah. But he did beat Tsunoda, Sargeant, Ricciardo, Bottas, and Joe. So
Tsunoda was a disappointment for me.
He's had a shocker in the end.
Yeah. Tsunoda had a, I thought, disappointing.
Mm. All right, I said we'd talk Andretti. Jonathan, you had this story. Was it you that had it in there? Or was it Bob?
I think it was Bob.
Yeah, Bob, talking about Andretti with their announcement of
the facility.
Yeah, I loved it. And it was talk about political commentary. They showed pictures of their building site in Indianapolis area, and they've made some changes, and they're proceeding with construction at pace, which happens to be the exact phrase they used when they were denied a position on the Formula One grid next year and said, we're going to keep pursuing our membership in the Formula One fraternity at pace, which I thought,
and also
that just jumps right off the page.
And also it was carefully written to point out that the people who had designed said buildings were British and had just finished their work on the Aston Martin project. So, I mean, basically saying, we're using the same people that Aston Martin use. And therefore,
and
I mean, pretty impressive.
Silverstone is already, acquired. I don't know if it's set up and ready to go, but
very impressive.
We are proceeding.
Yeah, this is a story on motorsport.com. If you want to look it up, the headline is Andretti sends signal to F1 with images of its future U.S. base. This is Adam Cooper doing the story. Adam, Andretti Global has sent a strong signal to Formula One organization by revealing the first images of the U.S. headquarters.
It's definitely a signal, for sure.
Yes, definitely a signal. And where is that? It's just outside Fisher's, right? Just outside Indianapolis.
Yeah, Fisher's, near the airport.
Yep. Yeah. Well,
speaking of wild stories, you see the one that Sebastian Vettel has, how should I put this, refused to deny that he misses Formula One and would consider a comeback.
With Mercedes?
Yeah, I think he was talking with Toto Wolff. You know, he talks with everybody. Sebastian's a pretty chatty guy. But apparently there's still a connection there. His heart still speaks to driving the racing car. And he might consider coming back because he's made it clear in the past that he doesn't want to do anything else other than Formula One. So
he's still young enough and capable enough.
He's 36.
Yeah, but my gosh, those last two seasons were almost like, please go home. He wasn't in it, was he?
Mm. No, in the Aston Martin, no.
Hey, let's pivot to the Audi story. Chris Medlin, it wasn't long ago we were talking about, is Audi even fully committed? Are they really going to do this? Do they have cold feet? And now we're hearing that they're all in.
Yeah, they announced it. They put out a press release to make it clear where they're headed. But also it's because I think there was some uncertainty about how they were going to approach the partnership with Sauber. So if you remember when it was announced, I think was it summer 22, Audi said they were coming in as a power unit supplier in 2026 and that they would announce their partner for that in due course. Then they said it would be Sauber and that would be their works team, but that was their partner. But what they then confirmed yesterday is that they're going to take over the Sauber group completely, 100% takeover from Audi. So there's no half measures here. This is when anyone says, why aren't Andretti buying a Formula One team? Well, there's not one for sale for starters, but the only one that is changing hands is because Audi has purchased Sauber and they already had a partnership agreed with them. And I would love to know the price. I don't actually have a figure on it. But if you think, I think it's $300 million that Andretti were looking to invest to take a majority shareholding in Sauber a number of years ago and then found out they weren't going to have the autonomy they wanted. And that's why that deal fell through. Sauber essentially were taking the money for the investment, but still wanted to run it completely themselves from Switzerland. So that's why Andretti never bought it then. And also, this would have been, you don't go into a bidding war with Audi that was already had a deal going on. So this was not an option for Andretti. But it'll be, I think it's Oliver Hoffman, who is currently on the board at Audi, is going to become the chairman of the Sauber Group. And he's going to head up Audi's kind of Formula One forward-facing corporate side, but then Andreas Seidel will be the F1 CEO for Audi for what they just call the Audi F1 team. So,
Does Sauber have any other interests now outside of Formula One? Any other sports car projects, etc.? Chariots?
Say again, sorry.
Audi?
Does Sauber have any other interests, whether it be Chariots or a sports car project or anything else asset wise?
So, they do a lot of kind of manufacturing and building and sim work. So essentially they're like a supplier to lots of other companies, but they don't have their own chassis as such that goes into sports cars. That would be if a sports car manufacturer needed a part making, they might well partner with Sauber to do it or get Sauber to make it. But they also do a lot that's not motorsport, if I recall correctly. So they're quite diverse in that sense. But no, from a motorsport point of view, it seems to be that they've only focused now on F1 for their own entity.
And Cheruse was connected with Sauber, but it's gone, right?
Yeah, in Himmel and Switzerland. It is. I suspect that the time it's taken Audi to get from where Chris left them off and the announcement that came this week was to negotiate the rest of that takeover. I think it was always Audi's intention to take over the whole thing, but they hadn't quite gotten the ink dry on what it was going to take to complete going from a majority shareholder to a single shareholder in the team, the Audi group. I mean, the Sauber group.
Jonathan, I was a bad host because there was another Andretti story that you had in there that we wanted to talk about General Motors. And your story was, are they still confident in Andretti?
Yeah, that was, the question mark being, is General Motors still there? And the answer is yes.
They have cold feet. Is everybody, is anybody?
No. Yeah. And their story basically saying that General Motors have not got cold feet and they are still committed to an Andretti project. And that's an important story. In what's going on at the moment and with, obviously the question mark being thrown out there, given that they haven't got the go ahead. It's a long way to 2028, but are GM committed? And if they are, then that story about the facility, et cetera, all makes sense and give credence to, effectively their partner being all in. And so therefore, yeah, that's why I put it in there, was to basically say, look, despite all that's gone on, the biggest motor company in the world, or one of them, is still heavily committed to Formula One. And that's important both to Formula One, to Ford, to the sport, to the auto industry, and obviously mainly important to Andretti's going forward on pace.
Yeah. Chris, sorry, buddy. I know that some of these stories you have on Racer, we should be showing those.
Unbelievable. I was thinking that with the Andretti
season. I know.
But then actually I looked because I thought that would be an IndyCar taken story rather than anywhere else, and I couldn't find it. So I'm going to have to do some digging to make sure we have that, the HQ, because I got the press release, saw the pictures. Looks a little bit, still a little bit McLaren-esque, isn't it?
Yes.
A little bit of balancing pond.
Very much so.
Definitely. Yeah.
If you want a further Red Bull-esque development, Christian Horner post-race has been very keen to point out that no individual is bigger than the team when discussing Max and Marco's future. And I think he's trying to push back a bit and say Max doesn't get to run the team by saying what he wants to happen or doesn't want to happen. Now, it's true, but at the same time, Christian's then saying the same thing for himself, isn't he? No individual is bigger than the team.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Back at you, buddy.
It's an interesting situation because the battle lines are drawn. The Verstappens have said they want him out, clearly, in reading between the lines. And
you don't have to read between Jos Verstappen's lines.
No, and Red Bull, at the moment anyway, is still backing Horner. So.
Well, I still say, behind all this is a line that I'll never forget from Ross Braun back in the day, trying to get the Honda to work before it became Braun GP. And he was asked about drivers, who might you get? Who's the best? Yada, yada, yada. Braun said, we're not worrying about drivers right now. We're worrying about creating the best car on the grid. If you have the best car, you don't need to worry about drivers because they're coming to you. And that's exactly the situation. True. Max Verstappen and his ilk, his posse on that side of the Horner issue has got to be thinking. I mean, does this issue matters so much to me that I would give up the best car on the grid and go somewhere else? I don't think so.
Toto Wolff actually gave a modern version of that just a couple of days ago by saying, he was asked whether he would be interested in Max Verstappen, and he kind of turned the question on its head by saying, look, yes, of course we'd be interested, but the best driver in the world will go where the best car is, and right now the best car is at Red Bull.
Every time.
So. Yeah, he said something similar tonight, actually. He said he'd love to have him, and that there wouldn't be a team that wouldn't do handstands to have him.
Mm-hmm.
But his point of I'd love to have him is because Merck is so far off the pace right now that he'd love to be in a position that Max wants to go there. So I don't think it's as clear cut that that's where he'd end up if he does leave. But that's going to rumble on. That's going to be one that we're talking about for weeks and weeks. And hopefully, if the signs from Ferrari were pretty strong this weekend, that they can really challenge Red Bull at some races, It's going to be fun to watch when the pressure's put on Red Bull during a Grand Prix, isn't it?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
We're out of time. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in. Don't forget, Wheel to Wheel this week and next
Australia.
Sunday night. No, not we got a week, but next Sunday night, we'll be live in Austin. Thanks, everybody. Talk to you soon.
Have a trip.